Hello and welcome to Escape into Storytelling. I'm Jennifer Bradley, and this is a chapter from my self-published novel, Virago. New episodes drop each Monday, and all chapters will be available at the end of the book. As always, there is no charge. Virago is intended for a mature audience, and today's episode contains language. If you missed last week's episode, it is available from the same podcast source. Now please, sit back and escape into storytelling with me in today's episode. Chapter 16. The Lady's Table Talks of Heroes, Adelaide's Friends Talk of Eggs. Gordon sat with a fixed look of polite interest all afternoon. The skin at the corners of his mouth felt dry and cracked from the effort of so much false smiling.
Thursday again, and time to listen to the captain's reports. Ye gods, what has my life become? We're going on 4 hours now, with no sign of stopping.
Alistair had business elsewhere and was absent, but the rest of the members of the ladies' table were present, including the spymaster in his alcove.
I swear I can feel Victor's eyes on the back of my head. It's like there's a tick walking around under my hair, looking for just the right spot to bite.
Erotsny Plevik, master of brick, was talking about streamlining the process to obtain building permits, and had been for some time. Lord Andon Morthau, whom Gordon thought of as Lord Dust, leaned on the table on his elbow, chin in hand, asleep.
Oh, well, it hasn't been a total loss. There was that moment an hour ago when Lord Dust snorted himself awake while Galbraith was discussing whatever he was discussing, and then when Victor announced he would be stepping into the role of Lord Commander of the Watch, I thought Captain Inborn was going to faint dead away. Fool. He ought to have made the same show as Bedloe. That little bastard looked ready to drop and suck Victor's cock.
At long last, Plevik wound to a close. He thanked the table for their attention and sat down.
Thank the gods, I was...
Plowright raised his hand.
If I may, fellow table members.
Gordon swallowed a scream. Plowright took to the floor, his tawny robe swirling about burgundy leather boots.
I'd like to draw the table's attention to a matter I hold as deeply important. I'm only sorry this lordship is not here, but I can assure you this matter can no longer wait.
I can assure you it could have waited. If the Armisans joined with the Empire and were bearing down on us with siege towers and fire-breathing dragons that spit exploding cannonballs, it could have waited. I have to piss like we've been planning the Duchess's official birthday festivities for months now. But I wonder... how many of us are familiar with the unofficial festivities?
Plowright received blank looks. A few people made curious noises.
Are these the plays the people put on?
Lady Galbraith asked in a frosty tone.
Aren't they a bit... saucy? Lord Balthakar asked,
smoothing his wiry eyebrows. Plowright nodded and tilted his head as if conceding the point.
Indeed, they are at times uncouth and coarse. Many's the time a bare bottom or other has been shown for a laugh, but the people cherish this form of entertainment, known as the Heroes Festival.
I've heard of that, Lady Orswell remarked. My footman told me about it.
Of course, they must talk about something after he's done ploughing her.
Gordon faked a cough to hide a snicker.
Anyone who wasn't born with their head stuck in a pumpkin knows what the Heroes Festival is. Father even dragged me to a few shows, but I hated every minute of it. Although there's one play that used to be very popular that I'd very much like to see.
A creak from the spymaster's stool indicated Victor had shifted position. Gordon did his best to defy his own anatomy and glance behind himself, but failed. Plowright clasped his hands before going on.
Myths, legends, or the lives of certain historical personages are dramatized and performed throughout the city. The life of Her Grace is popular, as is the fall of the Emperor, the rise of Jacinta Sandoval, things like that. The audience wear costumes to show support of their favorite characters and heroes.
Or to make fools of them.
Gordon faked another cough to cover up laughter. A servant appeared with a glass of water. Plowright took a breath.
He's nervous about something.
Gordon sipped his water.
There has been some talk of late of making the Heroes Festival illegal. In my opinion,
This is a very bad idea.
Gordon heard another creak from the stool behind him, and worked hard to contain his smile.
For one thing, these plays create local revenue. Food and beverage vendors, musicians, tailors, jewelers, all make extra income from the festival. Indeed, the festival is nearly a given, and money has certainly already changed hands.
More importantly, my lords and ladies, the city has seen hard days of late. Our own captains detail horrors to us every week, but we only hear them. The people see them. They must live with them, even step over their aftermath in the street as they go on with their lives. Should we deny them one of their few pleasures? Should we take that joy away from them?
But if there's some security concern, young Peldon began,
I would feel more comfortable making this decision with Alistair here, Lord Galbraith said. It seems the sort of thing we'd need him for.
Gordon heard the scrape of wood behind him. He stopped breathing, imagining the huntsman drawing himself up, a black silhouette growing like a pool of spilled ink. Every head and eye in the room turned to the alcove. Even the guards by the door strained to see, their eyeballs swiveled nearly out of their sockets.
His lordship has already discussed this matter with me. I advised him to allow the festival to proceed.
I saw that, Plowright. I saw the way your face twitched. Well played.
Plowright smiled at Lord Victor Woodburn.
You did.
Indeed. The people are expecting their revels. They will not be denied. Forbid them something and it becomes that much more enticing. We will waste resources arresting citizens who are otherwise law-abiding over trifles.
He must know about it. He must know that one of the most popular plays is always...
Well, I am pleased to find we are in agreement, Plowright said.
Gods, Victor's smart. He knows outlawing it will just make them want it even more, but letting it go on. Well,
who in their right mind would stage the Brothers Woodburn now, especially with him back in town?
Gordon shook his head.
I have to give him his due. The man knows people.
Ta-da!
The storeroom doorway of Gort's shop was suddenly full. It was usually full of bright colors and jingling necklaces when the big tailor stood in the doorway, but now it was full of thick, dark brown fur. A snarling bear raised its paws, brandishing wooden claws.
Where on earth did you get that? Alan asked, gaping.
He stood at the counter near Adelaide, where they'd been chatting a moment before. The bear's paws rose to its neck and undid a hidden fastener. The entire snarling head flopped back like a hood, and Gert's round pink face grinned from within.
From another tailor who couldn't sell it years ago. I'm surprised the moth didn't carry it away.
Alan cocked his head.
A bear? Really?
Gert tutted.
Well, apparently they don't make lions in my size.
It's lovely, Adelaide said, lifting one of Gert's paws to examine the wooden claws.
It wasn't very old. A grizzly, but no scars and not very big. No gray or white hairs anywhere, and male from the smell. Poor little thing.
To think it's been upstairs all this time, along with 8 years' worth of junk. But we're cleaning it out. Remember how I used to have a little bed up there?
Alan grinned and raised a feathery red eyebrow.
I do seem to recall.
Don't get saucy. It's too early in the day. Anyway, once we get all that shit cleared out, Adelaide can stay up there.
He patted her on the head.
And when you're tossing and turning in the night, you can come downstairs and work. You can be my little magic elf making clothes in the night.
She laughed.
She'll be safer than us. She won't have to walk home at night.
Gert nodded.
Aye, another murder right down from Scythe? Poor Wynne was beside himself this morning.
Gert undid more hidden buttons along his side, revealing his bright orange outfit.
Is that what you're wearing to the play?
Gert's face darkened as he stepped out of the suit and folded it.
I told you I'm not going. I'll go to the festivals and drink in pubs and dance around the maypole with flowers on my head, but I'm not going to the play.
What play? The Brothers Woodburn. It's my favorite.
Alan's brow furrowed as he looked back at Gert.
Why not? I thought you wanted to go.
Because I...
Gert reconsidered his words and his eyes darted at Adelaide.
Because, isn't that enough?
Alan tilted his head. "But I bought 4 tickets. You said last year you wanted to see it. You were sorry you missed it. I was sure to get them this time."
"We can go to another play.
But last..."
"We'll talk about it at home."
He threw himself down on his stool and snatched up the child's dress he'd been sewing. Alan crossed his arms, refusing to budge. "No, we won't. You'll sulk the whole walk and then go and fuss at cook about how she's making dinner wrong."
"Well, she uses too much salt."
Silence hung in the air, broken by the sound of the needle popping through the weave of the fabric. Alan let out a sigh that was half annoyance, half weariness. He glanced at Adelaide and rolled his eyes. "All right, fine. We won't go."
"Thank you. I love you, dear."
Gert went back to his sewing. Alan glanced at Adelaide and gave her a grin and a wink. "Anyway, are you clearing out the room today?"
"Just taking a break. If I'm up there too long, I start sneezing fit to blow my head off."
Alan hid a smirk. "Maybe Luthus could come by. If I see him, I'll send him your way."
"You are just full of beans today."
"You haven't seen Carver about, have you?" Neville asked for what felt like the 20th time. "Your friend with the mustache? Nah, I haven't seen him," the 20th tavern girl said, shrugging. Neville turned away, cursing under his breath. In the country, it's easy to find somebody. There's only 3 or 4 places they could be. Work, home, or the town square. I guess they might be at the old fishing hole or the drinking stump or wandering the hills in search of life's meaning, but usually not. Here I could be in 10 feet of him and not know. I hope he isn't passed out drunk behind some barrel I've walked by 5 times. Neville spent the better part of the day knocking on bolt-hole doors, peering under taverns and in crawl spaces, and interrogating bar girls. He stepped into yet another run-down tavern and paused in the dim interior, blinking, when a familiar voice to his right said,
"Fancy running into you, old son."
A door was closing behind Carver. Neville saw the flicker of candlelight and some people lying on blankets on the floor. Then the door shut, and all he saw was the lined face, orange mustache, and battered hat.
"What's the matter? See something green?"
"I'd like to see something gold," Neville said. They pushed outside, which was brightened but not warmed by the autumn sun.
"You're a hard man to find."
"Only when I don't want to be found."
Carver slapped Neville's chest, producing a small puff of dust.
"You're a northern girl, not keeping you washed anymore."
No, she never did."
"You pay her back yet?"
Neville looked as if he might say something hot, then sighed and leaned against the outer wall of the tavern.
"Almost."
Carver shook his head.
"Sorry, lad, I've got nothing going. And after that last..."
"Don't say it. Don't say anything about it."
I'm not. I haven't. But what I'm saying is I got nothing going after that. I haven't the nerve to be within a stone's throw of Anders or Remuel. And things are changing. Nobody knows about that, but everyone knows, if you get my drift. They're drawing a lot of lines in the sand, and if you're not on their side, you don't work with them. I'm not sure you'll find anything but good, honest, cheap-as-dirt work."
A rag picker trundled a barrow with a broken wheel along the street. The picker, whose clothes were so shabby and its hair so dirty and matted that its gender, age, and even skin color was unidentifiable, paused to investigate a pile of trash. The hand that prodded the pile was missing 2 fingers.
"Cheap, but honest," Neville said, tearing his eyes away. "That'll do."
Gert and Adelaide borrowed a wagon and used it to cart away all the old broken furniture and junk from the shop's attic. They swept and mopped the floors, rid the ceiling and walls of cobwebs, and cleaned the windows. The sewing supplies were tallied and organized, and whatever was useful was added to the current stores. Anything else Gert threw into a large sack. Through it all, the shop shook to his sneezes.
"I'm knackered,"
the tailor said, collapsing onto the patio chair. He handed her some coins.
"Run and get lunch. I'm in the mood for soup. How about you?"
At her nod, he waved a hand.
"Tell Mr. Soupbush I said hello."
Mr. Soupbush ran a brisk business from the window of his house. Adelaide's entire impression of the man was a pair of brown hands that stuck out of a great, wiry red beard.
Sometimes eyes glinted above the beard, but it was rare. He rarely spoke, but gave an impression of being friendly. Adelaide received 2 bread bowls full of onion soup and thanked the bushy area of his face.
I'm so glad I figured out that wasn't his name before I said something stupid. Gert and his little jokes, honestly.
When she returned to the shop, Gert lounged in both chairs on the patio, his feet resting in the second.
Thank you, dear. What are you having? He asked as he took both bowls, grinning.
The shop's back door opened. Luthus took in the scene and burst out laughing. Gert primly removed his feet.
All right, have your fun. Did Alan send you?
Aye, Luthus said, wearing his street clothes. Alan said you were doing hard labor, so I had to come see for myself. He held a folded piece of paper out to Adelaide in what had become a ritual greeting. She took the paper and hid it away in a pocket. Gert threw his arms into the air.
Why does everyone act so surprised? You all forget. I grew up doing hard work at the inn, carrying crates and barrels and such. And after Wynne left, I did his work, too.
Luthus tilted his head.
Was that before or after the egg throwing?
Adelaide looked up from her bowl.
Egg throwing.
Gert rolled his eyes.
I did that once. I was upset. My big brother left me to go peel potatoes and wash dishes in the watch kitchen. What else could I do?
Luthus nodded sagely.
Aye, what else could you do but throw rotten eggs at him until he threw up?
A beatific smile crept across Gert's face, and he sighed.
I planned it perfectly, you know. One of the great, brilliant moments of my life. I waited until he came by on rounds because I knew he couldn't quit in the middle, and I jumped out and threw over a dozen. Most hit him, too. He had to walk his whole round covered in it. The best part was when he got home. I went crying straight to Papa to save me, and he wouldn't let Wynne lay a hand on me.
It was glorious. His eyes shone at the memory.
That's awful, Luthus observed. He did worse. Once he threw my shoes in the privy. We were right little bastards to each other.
What Gert referred to as an attic was actually the second floor of the shop. There were 4 windows each in the side and front walls, shaded by trees in the roof. They filled the room with pleasant light and provided a decent view of the street out front. The back wall was dominated by racks of sewing supplies and bolts of cloth, but otherwise Adelaide now had a large room to herself.
The light's cheerful enough, but there's so much empty space. And the bed's big enough to sleep 3 of me, although it's a bit run down. Needs a new pallet and blankets, at least.
Gert surveyed their work.
Well, once you get a blanket, throw up some curtains, a few plants, maybe a rag rug, it'll look much more homey.
He was covered in dust and spiderwebs.
What about this stuff? Luthus asked, staring at some old planks of wood near the stairs. Oh, that can all go. We were going to take it down later, but since you're here...
Luthus raised an eyebrow, but bent to the task. He lifted one of the planks and awkwardly carried it down the stairs, cursing as it banged against the walls and corners. Gert strode over to stand next to her. Together, they looked down at the ancient bed.
I'll go down to the market for a new pallet and some blankets.
He said nothing.
I guess I could also ask Wendover if he has anything he could give me.
Wendover was an East Coast tailor that Gert sometimes shared supplies or work with.
Linens and things.
Gert continued to say nothing. She looked up. He was beaming down at her, the blue eyes twinkling. The blue eyes darted toward the bed, then toward the door. The grin widened. One eyebrow crept up his head in a leer that took eons.
Does he mean Luthus? But I'm not... Wait, am I blushing?
He held up a warning finger.
Not that you can't do better, of course. But as this elderly piece of furniture gave me many happy years, it's only fitting it be passed on to a new master. It's a wonder the poor thing survived.
I didn't...
Anyway... He's coming to dinner tonight. You can talk to him then.
She blinked.
Dinner?
Of course. Didn't I invite you?
No.
Pfft. Oh, that must be why. Alan wondered why you hadn't come to dinner yet. I was supposed to invite you 2 Wednesdays ago.
Adelaide met up with Winston and his family at the statue of the old gentleman. Winston was holding Gabby on his shoulders, and from that vantage, she was able to nearly touch the bronze man's outstretched hand. Winston's wife, Melora, was tall, with long dark hair and a square, pretty face. Once introductions were made, the quartet set off.
I wish Miriam had been home, or Annabel had wanted to come.
Oh, well, I know almost everyone here, and Melora and Gabby are nice.
Melora was friendly and made small talk, and Adelaide did her best to keep up with the long-legged pair as they made their way across the city. Gert and Alan lived in Westmont in a large, fine house with plaster walls, dark timbers, and a slate roof. There were even glass windows on the second floor.
Hazelnut House, Winston said as they paused in the front drive.
You mean the color, I suppose?
No, I mean that's the name. Houses in Westmont have names. This one's named for a hazelnut tree that was here 100 years ago. It's not here now.
We should name ours, Melora mused.
Husband's pants on the floor house.
Melora's coffee mugs everywhere house, Winston countered as he headed for the front door and pulled keys from his pocket.
Oh, I like that one. Or
Winston would sleep on a pile of rags if Melora didn't insist on buying furniture house.
That's too long for a sign.
Winston led them through the hall to a spacious kitchen, where they found Alan and Cook roasting 4 small game birds rolled in salt and pepper. There were green beans, mashed parsnips, and rolls. Several bottles of wine stood at the ready.
At last we can eat, Gert said upon spying them in the entrance. Hello to you too, Winston said as he lowered Gabby to the floor.
We're nearly done. Go ahead to the table. Alan used a rag and 2 hands to lift a heavy black pot from a hook over the fire. Muscles stood out in his slim white arms. As the guests passed through the drawing room, Adelaide looked over the paintings on the wall.
Have you seen these? Melora asked, indicating the artwork.
Alan painted all of them.
Portraits of the family hung everywhere, including Winston and Melora holding a baby Gabby, and one of Alan and Gert. There were also smaller paintings of various things, bowls of fruit and one of a dark red rose. They reached a painting at the end of the hall.
This one's my favorite, Melora whispered.
The painting showed Gert in a rippling white toga. He stood heroically on a pile of sleeping pigs, holding aloft a shining green pear in his right hand as if offering it to the sky. Behind him, golden clouds boiled around a glorious sunrise. The mud looked freshly stirred, and the pig's haunches had a sleek shine.
Ignore that! Alan thinks he's funny when he does things like that! Gert shouted from the kitchen.
After they ate, the whole group moved to the common room. Mugs of hot mulled wine were passed around, and Alan built a low, fragrant fire of pine wood in the hearth. Throughout dinner, Adelaide thought she saw Luthus looking at her from the corner of her eye, but when she looked at him, he was always turned away. Gert told the egg-throwing story in greater detail, to much laughter.
That's all right, I earned it. I did worse to him. A few years before, I stripped him naked in the street and threw his clothes in a tree. He had to walk half the Grey Line home naked and tell Mother where his clothes were.
I forgot about that, Gert said, his hand over his mouth.
When was that? I think I was 12, so you must have been about 10.
Winston shook his head.
I don't know what I was thinking. Mother made me go and get his clothes back anyway after the whipping.
Gert feigned a scandalized gasp.
Melora, did you know? Did you know about the monster you married?
Melora smiled and winked.
Of course. I remember the first time he threw my clothes up a tree.
It's how we met.
Isn't that how everyone meets? Alan asked from his place on the couch. Gabby slept in his lap.
I think the brothers inborn consider that courting, Luthus observed, although he's never done that to me. Winston toasted his lieutenant.
Well, the night is young.
Adelaide lay sideways across one of the large chairs, her feet and head resting on the arms. Part of her wished she had a funny story to tell, but the rest of her was content to listen.
I'll tell you what he has done to me, Luthus said. A couple years ago, we were looking for this lost little girl, and...
Oh, gods, not the chicken coop story again. Adelaide's eyes grew heavy, and soon she was asleep. Adelaide woke in a room she didn't recognize. She lay in a plain four-poster bed, tucked under the blankets. She saw pale walls, windows lit from the half-moon overhead, curtains, and a cold hearth. A pitcher and a mug of water stood on the table next to the bed.
Gert's house? I'm in one of the guest rooms. I remember someone carrying me up the stairs and giving me a glass of water to drink.
She was still dressed, and her shoes waited next to the bed. Under her fast pulse was another, steadier beat. Luthus slept in a chair by the cold hearth. Dark hair hung across his face, and his black pepper and lemon scent filled the room. One leg was drawn up, and his boots lay under the chair like faithful dogs. Another pulse began to beat, down between her thighs. Although men were ubiquitous throughout the city, she hadn't given them much thought. She liked men, but somewhere since arriving in Glendale had started thinking of them like houses and buildings. They were everywhere, they were part of the city, many of them were aesthetically pleasing. Some people had them, but having one of her own had not entered into the definition. There was so much else to worry about. Learning how to live in the city, following Annabelle's rules, practicing letters, and then finding work.
I suppose once Neville stopped being interested in me, I sort of forgot about all that.
Neville had, once upon a time, been interested in her, romantically. As she had no experience beforehand and the men of her village were coarse and only interested in sex for reproduction, the idea of actual pleasure was a delightful novelty. She welcomed his attention and even reciprocated, and they had been intimate more than a few times. But then, somewhere in the vast space between you and Glendale, his view toward her had changed. When their eyes met, he would look away as if troubled. No longer did his hand drift to her lower back as they sat together in the wagon's bench seat. Nor did he whisper breathy words into her ear that made her shiver. The last two times they'd been intimate, he'd been drunk and dutiful at best. She pushed back the covers and slid her legs out of bed. Still feeling the effects of the wine, the room wavered a little as she padded to the chair.
I like him. He makes me laugh and he cares about others, and I'm almost sure I saw him looking at me.
She bit her lip and thought,
well, what's the worst that could happen?
He woke at her touch, blinking. His eyes were flat black disks in the darkness, wide and staring.
Adelaide? What are you doing in here?
Still staring, he looked up toward her face. Oh, well, they ran out of guest rooms, and after I brought you up, I sat down to take my shoes off, and then... I'll go. There's a couch downstairs. I'll just... He swung his legs down from the chair to the floor and made as if to rise. Her hand settled on his chest.
Would you prefer to stay?
His heartbeat doubled. The pepper-lemon smell took on a new note and mixed with heady musk. She bent and her mouth was on his. A sound escaped him that was both desire and relief. In the morning, the bed still smelled of Luthus. Adelaide sat up, her brow furrowing.
Did he just leave? All his things are gone, too.
Voices murmured in the kitchen downstairs. Warm smells of breakfast filled the house. Hot butter, strong black coffee, roasting potatoes, and sweet cured ham. Under it was Alan's smell of iron milk and cinnamon, and Luthus's black pepper and lemon. She rose and dressed. Luthus sat at the table, a steaming mug in his hands, as he watched Alan by the hearth. They were talking of the upcoming parade. When the lieutenant saw her, he gave her an uncertain smile and looked away.
I'm not sorry it happened, but it looks like he is.
Alan knelt by the hearth, still in his pajamas, and with his hair drawn up into a little red bun on top of his head. When he saw Adelaide, he smiled. Then his hazel eyes jumped between she and Luthus.
Well, I ran out of eggs. I'll just run out to the coop. Won't be a moment.
Alan sped from the room, passing a wire basket of eggs on the counter. She poured herself a mug of coffee and sat next to Luthus.
I'm not, did you?
She laughed, and a genuine grin spread his lips. You first.
I'm not sorry it happened.
Me either.
I'm glad, actually.
Me too.
But I'll say that I'm not used to this sort of thing.
What sort of thing?
I don't know. I guess I've never brought a girl to Gert's before.
She held up a finger. Ah, but you didn't bring me. Gert invited me, and I brought myself.
That's a good point. I've never brought any home to my family either. Might be why they don't stick around.
Ooh. She tilted her head. Did you write them notes too?
He shook his head, then stared into his coffee mug. With her other hand, she reached into the pocket of her dress.
You look pretty today.
Luthus looked up to find her head bent over a little bundle of familiar papers.
You kept them? You can read them now.
Adelaide bent her head and read a few more. The notes ranged from compliments like, I like your eyes, to observations on the weather, I hope it doesn't rain, to comments on Gert's moods, Gert is bossy and you should tell him. She saved the first note he'd written for last.
I want to make you laugh.
He rubbed his chin. I can't believe you kept them.
Aye.
A light of mischief was behind her eyes and she grinned and leaned toward him. He licked his lips.
You misspelled laugh.
Laughter erupted from the hallway. Gert appeared, both hands covering his mouth, eyes shining and face red.
I'm sorry, I'm a horrible person for listening.
All of those, Luthus agreed.
Forgive me for listening and I'll forgive you for the ill use of my furniture. There, all is well.
Gert headed for the kettle over the hearth.
Is there more coffee? Where's Alan? He usually has my eggs ready by now.
This concludes Chapter 16 of Virago. Stay tuned for the next episode, Chapter 17. Lord Victor Woodborne Makes a Point. If you want to read along, Virago will be available in abridged print or ebook format from Amazon later this year. If you enjoyed this work, please remember to like, share, and subscribe so you never miss an episode of Escape into Storytelling. Thank you for supporting independent and self-published authors like me. Until next time, be seeing you.